steps to the mic with a boom ping ping. Wisdom sharper than a bee's fierce sting. Words like fireflies that light the night. He turns the dark into blazing bright. Boom ping ping, the truth takes wing. Milwaukee's voice, let the city sing. Boom ping ping, hear the freedom ring. Sherwin's the king, oh the airwaves king. The ground unveils the truth where lies abound. Politics, justice, social streams. He molds the chaos into dreams. No silence here, just the sound of change. Boom, ping, ping, rearrange ya. Boom, ping, ping, the truth takes wing. Milwaukee's voice, let the city sing. Boom, ping, ping, hear the freedom ring. Sherwin's the king or the airwaves king. Through the static, through the noise, he amplifies the people's voice. Boom, ping, ping, like a heartbeat's call. He's got the wisdom to break down walls. Yeah.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday, July 15th, 2026. I am disappointed, to say the least, in what has transpired over the last 24 hours regarding Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez's campaign. There's something here that just doesn't add up, doesn't seem right. I think it is unnecessarily mean and condescending, but I also think this is giving at least me, maybe not you, but giving me some insight into who Sarah Rodriguez is. Now, let me also say this. I don't know her. I've never met her. I have made attempts to reach out to her to get her on the air, because when she got elected lieutenant governor, I was unfamiliar with her and wanted to get to know her. Also, I wanted to have that conversation in front of you all so we could at least know who Mandela Barnes' successor is, because Mandela did not run for re-election to lieutenant governor because he ran for the U.S. Senate in 2022. So I never ended up speaking with her. It is what it is. Tony Evers decided within the last year or so that he was not running for re-election, and Sarah Rodriguez, of course, lieutenant governor, would be the heir apparent. And I find it very unusual that not only do we not really know her, the voters in the state of Wisconsin don't know her all that well either, which does not bode well for an incumbent, because if you've already been elected, you would think people would have more familiarity with you, and you would wonder why a state assembly representative from a single district in Madison has consistently outpaced and outpolled her. There's just something going on. It's a very unusual set of circumstances, you see. But there's an article that appeared in local media this morning, WISN, and it's not sitting well with me. And I'm not one to typically give my sympathies to people that I don't know, but there's something about this that just shows an unnecessary kind of disrespect that the lieutenant governor is showing to her former campaign manager. I also have a whole bunch of questions about why a campaign manager has a disproportionate amount of impact or say-so over campaign finance reports. money and campaigns is handled by an entirely separate shop. Every campaign I have ever been associated with, and over the years, it has probably been hundreds. You have an accountant, a certified public accountant, someone who is experienced and knowledgeable on campaign finance, and those people exist. You can hire them. And then you also have a treasurer, which is another human being who signs documents related to campaign contributions and distributions and deposits, etc. You have a whole separate branch of your campaign that takes care of the money, because we know that the poisonous influence of money in politics is very corrupting. I told a story yesterday about former state senator Jeff Plaley. May he rest in peace. He was going through a very bitter divorce many, many years ago. His checking account was essentially empty. He had negative $7 in his checking account, but in his campaign finance account, the account in which he deposits his money for his reelection bid, he had $150,000. And if he would have touched a single penny of that to pay his bills, to feed himself, to pay his rent or his mortgage, he would have went to prison. So it's very corrupting, and that is why you have separate people, separate entities, and separate signatures to handle your money. But there's something that's going on here, and I don't like how the lieutenant governor is acting. Let me just go ahead and say this full disclosure. Under no circumstance will I be voting for Sarah Rodriguez. I'm not telling you what to do. You can vote wherever you want to. Hell, you can even vote for me if you're in the mood to waste your vote. I'll take it. I just better not win, because if I win, I'll be very angry. We came up with an idea last night, a little strategy on the Hughes Views 414 podcast. At the time, it sounded like a fantastic idea and does relate to coalition building around this upcoming governor's race. I shouldn't even say upcoming, because the governor's race is here now. I try to figure out a strategy how we can get a piece of that surplus, because I think the north side of the city of Milwaukee needs a little love. We are very much in an anti-affirmative action, anti-DEI political and social climate, to where even liberals are very, very comfortable ignoring the wants, needs, and the wishes and desires of the African-American community. I think that there is a way out of that. I'm going to table that discussion for a second. I will at some point talk about this idea, the strategy that we came up with last night on the Hughes Views 414 podcast. But as I slept on it and I let it incubate, idea is novel, the execution very difficult. But let me get back to this Sarah Rodriguez story. And by all means, ladies and gentlemen, please tell me if I'm blowing something out of proportion. So I read the story a couple of times, because the first time I read it, I was like, well, this seems unnecessary. Sarah Rodriguez is throwing this Kara Spencer lady completely under the bus. And I haven't really seen this ever in Democratic Party politics. So what happens in the Trump universe and Trump world, Trump will have an ally. It'll be a press secretary. It'll be a campaign manager, a campaign strategist. Corey Lewandowski. Like, you know, he's had a whole bunch of Steve Saramucci. He's had all these people, right, that were close to him. And he speaks very highly of them when he is working with them, when they are working for him. But then something happens, and he doesn't just fire these people. He does this thing where he tries to destroy their character and their credibility. And that's an awful thing to do, because you are now harming someone's future prospects for work. If it doesn't work out with you and a particular person or an employee, staff person, and you fire them, okay, then you sever ties. Everybody moves on with their life. But the fact that Donald Trump is very intentional and has these concerted efforts where he doesn't just fire somebody, he tries to destroy them personally, which is a really horrible and petty thing to do. But it is what I expect from him. It is not what I expect from Democrats. Democrats don't typically do that. In fact, if a Democratic candidate for whatever office has to let go of a staff person, not only is it done quietly, a lot of times they'll find another position for that person, so they can make them whole. They can say, well, you know, it didn't work out with, you know, you working on my congressional campaign. This didn't work out on my Senate campaign. Here, let's find another position for you somewhere else. Good luck to you. That is not what is happening with Sarah Rodriguez. And it just smells very fishy. Like, I think that the lieutenant governor is trying to destroy the credibility of her recently fired campaign manager to try and make herself look either clean or put more distance between her, the lieutenant governor, and the fraud that was committed in her campaign. From Madison, Wisconsin, Democratic Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, a candidate for Wisconsin's five-way gubernatorial primary, which is less than a month away, fired her campaign manager, Kara Spencer, this week over financial irregularities tied to the campaign. Why is there no mention of the lieutenant governor's treasurer or accountant that should be handling the millions of dollars of donations? I find this very odd. Why are you firing a campaign manager? There's an entire, like, bureaucracy of people that handle campaign money, but none of them are mentioned. Let me continue with the story, and you guys let me know if I'm blowing this out of proportion. And if I am blowing it out of proportion, I'm probably going to still continue to do so, but just let me know if I'm overthinking this, because I don't know if you know this. Your boy has a tendency to overthink things just a little bit. Rodriguez said on Monday that hundreds of thousands of dollars in donations were apparently double counted, leaving the campaign with far less cash on hand than she had been led to believe. Quote, "I am hurt, angry, and disappointed by someone I trusted to run my campaign. This was not just a breach of my trust, but our volunteers, our donors, and the voters who deserve better," Rodriguez said. And this is a very unorthodox situation, because you are never going to get away with double reporting dollars on a form, because if the money that is on the form that has to be submitted to the state board doesn't match up what's in the bank, because you want to rectify the numbers, right? So the campaign finance report is the log. It's the transaction list of all the money you've collected from individual donations and PAC donations, which Sarah Rodriguez takes a lot of, including a We Energies PAC. For those of you that don't like the We Energies, well, we like We Energies here because, well, hell, we got to be able to plug our radio transmitting equipment into something, and also what the business is. But there are some folks that don't like the We Energies, and We Energies got a little bit of a tax loophole, or at least they tried to get one. Sarah Rodriguez voted for it. Tony Evers vetoed it. So there's some nepotism, I suppose, between Sarah Rodriguez and We Energies. It is what it is, but let me get back to my point. You can't get away with double reporting campaign donations, because if what's in the bank doesn't match with what's on the ledger, you notice that immediately. So imagine this. Let's say my paycheck is, I almost told you what it was. Let's say my paycheck here at Milwaukee Black Media is $8 every 2 weeks. Okay? That's what my check is. $8 every 2 weeks gets directly deposited into my account. I wake up in the morning, boom, I got $8 in my account. And sometimes I'm so overwhelmed, I'm like, how am I going to spend this $8? But then I'll tell myself, well, actually, I have $16. So I'm going to write down $16 in my checkbook, but I really only have $8. I'm going to find that mistake immediately, especially after I spend my $8. I'm going to realize I don't have $16. I only had $8. It really is that simple. So double reporting campaign contributions just doesn't seem reasonable, feasible, or a mistake that somebody would make. "I am hurt, I am angry, and disappointed by someone I trusted to run my campaign. This was not just a breach of my trust, but our volunteers, our donors, and the voters who deserve better," Rodriguez said. But here's where it gets yucky. Public records reveal Spencer, her former campaign manager, the one who was fired for the misreporting of the campaign dollars. Public records reveal Spencer faced personal financial troubles. According to court documents from Dane County Court, her landlord twice attempted to evict her last year during the 8 months she lived in a Madison apartment for falling behind on rent. Why are they throwing this girl under the bus? Are they trying to insinuate that she stole money? Why is the lieutenant governor okay with it? It's one thing if you fired her and you want to clear up the errors, and Sarah Rodriguez said, oh, we're going to fix all the errors and we're going to amend our reports. But they're putting this young woman's financial business out there for the world to see. It's going to backfire. Just like they tried to do a story on Francesca because she had $30,000 in credit card debt, which is a real common story amongst working class Wisconsinites. You can't throw somebody under the bus because they don't make enough money and the cost of everything has gone up dramatically. To put Kara Spencer, who was the former campaign manager for Sarah Rodriguez, and throw her under the bus and talk about her evictions is disgusting. And I think this is probably coming from Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez herself. It's foul, it's disrespectful, and it's petty. You ain't got to do that to that girl. In fact, you know what Kara Spencer should do? Join the Francesca Hahn campaign. Because people that are economically disaffected will have a very comfortable home on a political campaign that's fighting for the economic justice of middle-class folk. This is just foul. The documents show Spencer had insufficient funds payments for 5 of those 8 months and owed more than $8,000 when she moved out in the midst of eviction proceedings last July. The address listed on the eviction paperwork matches the address in Rodriguez's campaign finance report, which shows payments made to Spencer for her work. I wouldn't doubt if whoever is now leading and running the Rodriguez campaign fed this information about Kara Spencer to the media to discredit that girl. You don't do that. You don't. Even though there were some mistakes that were made and we don't know the details of it, was it a simple accounting error or was there something deeper than that? Did it rise to the level of fraud? But before we get all of those details and have a full investigation of what actually happened with the lieutenant governor's campaign finance reports, why are you discrediting that girl? Because that's something that Trump would do. I'm telling you, I don't like it. I don't like this kind of behavior coming from the political party. It has to be the grown-ups and the adults in the room. Xavier, am I blowing this out of proportion? If you're going to fire somebody, why are you going to continue to throw them under the bus by looking at their evictions? That means that girl wasn't making enough money. She didn't have enough money. Am I being rude?
No, I think it just shows how kind of nasty she is, or who the people are that are running her campaign, how nasty they are.
I needed somebody to justify my feelings. The Rodriguez campaign stated it is continuing to investigate Spencer and the campaign's financial reports. The latest campaign finance report is due tomorrow. So it sounds like they want to accuse this woman of stealing, but it's almost like it's impossible because if, let me give you an example. Let's say there were $100,000 of bundled contributions. What appeared on the campaign finance report would be $200,000, okay? So they were inflating the actual amount that was received by the lieutenant governor's campaign for governor. Follow me here. So they may have received $100,000, but Kara Spencer, while she's reporting and putting numbers into the ledger of campaign finance reporting, I have no idea because that's not how that's supposed to work anyway. So they received $100,000, and then someone would put, oh, no, we have $200,000. But to expose this young woman's financial troubles and to talk about her evictions and that she owed $8,000 to her landlord, it makes it seem like she was broke and she may have been stealing from the campaign. If that was the case, you wouldn't take a $100,000 contribution and say it was $200,000. You would take a $100,000 contribution and say it was $50,000, and you would take the $50,000. This doesn't make any sense. I was actually thinking about reaching out to Lieutenant Governor to get her on the show, but it would be nasty work because it wouldn't be fair. I wouldn't let her talk about her campaign.
Well, I mean, you have questions, and this is the truth. So,
yeah, but she'd lie. And also, I don't like how, because she would probably just come on here and talk about how horrible her former campaign manager was. If I'm not mistaken, Kara Spencer had worked for Lieutenant Governor for a while. She wasn't just a new hire off of the street. They knew each other, had worked together before. So there was obviously some trust that had been established. But I don't like how she's throwing this woman under the bus, talking about her evictions and how much she owes her landlord. Like, why are you doing that? All you're doing is distracting from what your actual message is to the voters in the state of Wisconsin. So I'm going to take a break, come back. Maybe I'll share with you the strategy that we came up with last night of how our community can finally be respected and represented amongst the campaign platforms of these remaining gubernatorial candidates. That was a great idea last night that we all came up with, but as I slept on it, I think the idea has lost some of its momentum. Let's talk about that next. We're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. I'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
Not too much to make a move. You try to lock me, try to take away the jewels. You cannot stop it, gotta understand the rules. I've been the type to wear the heart on my sleeve. Been the one to always choose the role play. Like the type to ever see me lonely. I keep my socks on during loving. In and out, baby.
The documents show Spencer had insufficient funds payments for 5 of those 8 months and owed more than $8,000 when she moved out in the midst of eviction proceedings last July. The address listed in the eviction paperwork matches the address in Rodriguez's campaign finance report, which shows payments made to Spencer for her work. So somebody took the time to corroborate Kara Spencer, the former campaign manager for Sarah Rodriguez. They corroborated the payments made to her for her campaign managerial services and the address in which she was evicted from. Why do we even need to know that? I almost feel bad talking about it because it really isn't any of our business. But why is Sarah Rodriguez trying to completely discredit? Let me be real clear. Another woman. Why is she doing that? I'm not shocked. I'm not shocked. I'm just trying to point out some things that are obviously hypocritical. And we don't know if this was just an accounting error or if this was something much more sinister. And we also don't know all of the people that were involved. Personally, this is what I think. I don't have any evidence to back this up. This is just Sherwin speculation. I think that Sarah Rodriguez knew damn well that she didn't raise the amount of money that she wanted to raise. I think that they reported a higher number than they actually had, and they were going to go back and catch the mistake. Oh, no, it's a mistake. But when the report comes out, it shows that she has a very intimidating amount of money. I really don't believe that a campaign manager would overstep the authority of the treasurer and overstep the authority of the accountants that are hired to manage the finances of big campaigns like this. I just don't believe that that young woman would use her authority to overwrite all of those people who are actually responsible for those campaign contributions being logged correctly. It just doesn't make any sense because you're not going to get away with it, and it potentially is a felony. I just don't see it. There's always been something just nefarious and sneaky and dark about Sarah Rodriguez and also just her ambition. And don't let her last name fool you. Ain't nothing Rodriguez about her. I think she married a Hispanic man for the name. Oh, I've seen Stranger Things. Oh, I can tell you about a white male elected official that ran for office, let's just say a couple of decades ago, and the district was and is majority black. Follow me. Married a black woman, ran for office in a majority black district, and for some reason, voters will assign some kind of like invites you to the barbecue credibility to a white man. That marries a black woman seems to be okay with black voters. And when I say okay with black voters, I'm talking about black women. Black women don't mind when a black woman is married to a white man. I think black men, we really don't care. But the opposite is not true. If a black man was married to a white woman and he was running for office, he would get discredited and disqualified and thrown under the bus because the majority of the voters in our community are black women. Like when I saw that picture of Ketanji Brown, when she was sworn into the U.S. Supreme Court, because Joe Biden appointed the first black woman to the U.S. Supreme Court. And there's a photo of Ketanji Brown Jackson's very Caucasian husband. I mean, like translucent, transparent, very white. Okay. And there's a picture of him kissing his wife, now newly appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court, kissing her on the forehead, and the number of black women under that photo. Oh, my God, this is beautiful. This is love. Oh, look how much he loves her. Oh, it's so beautiful. Could you imagine those same black women saying those positive accolades if Clarence Thomas was getting kissed by his white wife? No, it's totally different. So anyways, this black, I'm sorry, Caucasian candidate runs for office in a majority black district, marries a black woman, wins the race, divorces the black woman, and gets remarried to a white woman that's racist. How do I know all this? Because that the current wife of that elected official posted a screed of racist rants against who? Ray Nitti. On Facebook in public. That's just wild to me that a white man can marry a black woman for political clout and credibility, get elected, divorce the black woman, and marry a racist white woman, and nobody even... Can I do that? Can I marry me a white lady and then run for office in a majority white district? No, I can't. I would get lynched for that. No matter what, I got to have me a black wife. Barack Obama couldn't have gotten elected president. Let's assume he was the same person. Let's assume he was a little bit better, a little smarter, a little more quick-witted. Let's assume that. But he had a white wife. He never would have got elected to the Senate. I just think, I don't know, it's not fair. I think you should be able to marry who you marry. It seems to me, and I'm not trying to go off of this cliff because we'll never recover the show. And I want to talk about watermelons today, because it's National Watermelon Month, and I love watermelon very much. I love how they taste. I love that they're very healthy and nutritious. I also love what they represent. And I know you're probably thinking, but Sherwin, watermelons are stereotyped. You black people eating the watermelon, do you know why they did that? Because it was a crop that symbolized black entrepreneurship and independence. After slavery ended, there was still a plantation economy. And trust me when I tell you, freed slaves did not want to go back and sharecrop. So we grew watermelon. And not only did we grow watermelon, black freed slaves were the largest cultivators of watermelon in the country. And so what happened was the white plantation society got very mad that we weren't coming back to the plantation and working for them and sharecropping. We had independence, so they started to stereotype black people and watermelon. I'm going to tell you that history because I think that you need to know that kind of stuff. And I love me a watermelon. I eat a watermelon a week. Sometimes when I'm in my kitchen, I give me some melon. Here's what I do when I get me a melon. Take it home, wash it off, cut it in half, the lengthwise. Wrap up one half, put it in the refrigerator because I need to get it cold. But then with the other half, I'll cut it up, put it in my watermelon bowl. Yes, I have a watermelon bowl. And every now and again, because I like it cold now, but I got to sneak me a piece. I got to sneak a couple pieces. So I cut my watermelon up, put it in my watermelon bowl. And then I'll disregard that half of the watermelon that I scooped out and put in my watermelon bowl. But because it's so juicy, it's really succulent. It is. I take off my shirt because I don't want to get watermelon juice all on my shirt. So what will happen is I give me a forkful of that melon. Sometimes I use my fingers. Don't judge me. It's my house. You don't like it, don't come to my house if you don't want to see me glistening with watermelon juice and watermelon on my fingers. And it'll get in my beard. Yes, sir. Yes, exactly. It'll drip down my chin. And it'll get on my very robust and muscular chest. And I'm just got to eat the watermelon. I eat it, and it's very delicious, and it's very healthy for you, too. So I just wanted to share that with you. July is National Watermelon Month. In fact, when I'm done here, I think I'm going to go get me a melon. The Rodriguez campaign stated it is continuing to investigate Spencer and the campaign's financial reports. The latest campaign finance report is due tomorrow. Rodriguez said on Monday she couldn't give the exact figure of the discrepancies in the campaign fund because they're still investigating, but said, quote, "I will generally say that there were hundreds of thousands of dollars less than I thought." Of course, you know exactly how much money you didn't raise. if you want to talk about an area in which candidates are sticklers and they watch every decimal point, every penny, because they're calling for these donations. They call people. It's called call time. They know exactly who they call. They have a whole sheet. Then they mark off on the sheet who they called, how much they pledged, and they watch the mail and they watch the electronic funds transfers to see if the person that they called gave the dollar amount. It is a whole program that candidates have. I can't even tell you how many times David Crowley asked me for money. And he would disguise the telephone calls and, hey, Sherwin, I'm just checking in with you, brother, just seeing how you're doing, everything going all right. Here I am thinking David Crowley actually wants to chat with me. And before the conversation ends, you know what he would say? Because he said the same thing every time. Hey, man, let me get $250 real quick. Like a dope fiend needing to get some crack. Here we are just chatting it up, talking about the world, talking about life. And hey, man, before you go. Can I get $250? No! I stopped answering his phone calls. And then he got mad. The last couple times he called me, I didn't answer the phone. So, I don't know, maybe David Crowley dropped out of the race because of me because I didn't give him no $250s. But I'd given him other $250s. I just was not going to give him no more $250s because I didn't like how he was spending my $250s. If I don't like how you're spending my $250s, I even went and got $250s from other people to give to him. I raised money for him. I didn't like how he was spending my $250s, and so I walked away. You get no more $250s from me. Now, let's be clear. Sherwin got a lot of $250s to give, but I'm very meticulous on who I give my $250s to. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. We'll be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Aaron says, if we work with the person Sherwin was referring to yesterday, we in the chat have to work very hard to get it done. Y'all ready? Came up with an idea yesterday via the Hughes Views 414 podcast. And I use history as a guide and as a reference. In 1960, John F. Kennedy won the presidency by the narrowest margins ever recorded. I don't know if we saw a margin as narrow as the 1960 presidential contest until 40 years later in the year 2000 when Al Gore and Joe Lieberman, now depends on how you look at that race, technically they won it, but the U.S. Supreme Court ordered the stoppage of counting of votes in the state of Florida where George W. Bush's brother was governor. After George W. Bush was up about 531 votes, the Supreme Court said, oh, that's enough, even though all of the votes were not counted. Therefore, I believe at the time, the 27 electoral votes from the state of Florida went to George W. Bush. Now, that makes an awful lot of sense because I tell you this much. If my brother is ever governor of a state, and I can assure you my brother will never be governor of a state, if I needed the state in which my brother is the chief executive, if I needed those electoral college votes to become president, I assure you I would get them. So we have not had a presidential contest as close as the ones in the year 2000 and 1960. Really, those are anomalies in American political and electoral history. But 1960 was a very unusual election because remember, in the South, you did not have enfranchised African Americans. There was no Voting Rights Act. There was no Civil Rights Act. There was still full-fledged Jim Crow. But the black vote did exist in the country. It existed in the East, in the Northeast, in the Midwest, and in the West. But in the South, it was essentially non-existent. I think all of you know that the majority of African Americans in America do and have always lived in the Southern states. So there's a large number of black votes that could not be cast because of Jim Crow and preventing us from registering to vote. You guys know all the civil rights marches and all of the dogs and the fire hoses and all of the evil sheriffs that were preventing us and arresting us and killing us when we tried to vote. But the remaining black vote in the country voted for John F. Kennedy in 1960. In fact, in 1960 was the first time that we saw 80% Democratic performance from black voters, voters that had the right and the ability to vote, like here in the North, in the East, and out West. First time we've ever seen black turnout reach 80% for any Democrat. Prior to that, in previous elections, whether it be Eisenhower or Truman or FDR, black people were still somewhat loyal to the Republican Party, but it was not until the election of 1960 where we really showed up, not just for the Democrat, we showed up for John F. Kennedy. And it was an unusual kind of election because John F. Kennedy was the first Catholic to become president, and there was a lot of resistance to electing a Catholic at the time because in that era in American history, religious bigotry was a very real thing. This is also a very Protestant, if not evangelical, nation as well. And you know, those Catholics are pretty much neither. John F. Kennedy won the presidency by the equivalent of one vote in every precinct in America. And what he and others attributed his very narrow victory to now depends on who you talk to and depends on their level of conspiracy. The African-American vote that showed up at an 80% number, which this nation has never seen before for a Democratic candidate, Kennedy believed pushed him over the edge. And Kennedy then proceeded to get to work on civil rights. In fact, and everybody needs to know this, Kennedy is inaugurated January 20th, 1961. By March 9th, 1961, so a month and a half after he is inaugurated, he uses his executive order pen to create affirmative action. He was making good on the fact that black voters pushed him over the top. And so he was going to be loyal to the agenda that was going to break the back of Jim Crow and give us not just affirmative action, but fair housing, a Civil Rights Act, and a Voting Rights Act. Kennedy was working on that to pay homage to the constituency that showed up for him and gave him the presidency. Now, Kennedy's work was cut short. But guess who continued that legacy? And I don't even think that Lyndon Johnson wanted to, but I think he wanted to represent the legacy of a slain president. So Lyndon Johnson gets all the credit for signing that legislation. But it came from Kennedy. Meaning, if black voters can form a bloc and a coalition to get an underdog elected, then you very well may engender some loyalty. Trump did the exact same thing. Trump was an underdog in 2016. When he came down that escalator, Trump was polling in single digits. Everybody thought he was nuts because remember, this dude is someone we have known from the tabloids for the last 40 years in American culture. We knew he was a womanizer. We knew he was a thief. He was a crook. We knew that he was a failed businessman. He had a bunch of casinos in New Jersey and Atlantic City that all went bankrupt. We knew who he was. He also toyed with running for president in 2000, and I think maybe even in an election cycle prior to that. He was seen palling around with the Clintons, both Hillary and Bill. In fact, at some point in Donald Trump's life, he was very much pro-life. I bet Donald Trump paid for a bunch of abortions. He probably had an abortion fund, and I'm not throwing shade. No, fair enough. Because Trump doesn't need more kids than he already has, okay? A series of deals were made with very unusual and unlikely people, but they formed a coalition. The evangelicals, the Christian right, and some more traditional conservatives like Mitch McConnell. They said, look here, Trump, you're not winning this election. But if we get behind you, and if we build a coalition of Southern Christian conservatives and evangelicals and people that want to see certain justices put on not just the U.S. Supreme Court, but the federal bench, we'll get you to win. He sat down with the Federalist Society. He sat down with the Heritage Foundation. These are people that would be as anti-Trump as you could ever imagine. They said, look, Trump, you're not winning, but we'll get you across the finish line. But here's what the hell you're going to do for us, because we're going to get you to win. And Mitch McConnell was also participatory in this as well, because Mitch McConnell's part was he was going to deny Barack Obama a third selection to the U.S. Supreme Court because they knew that the coalition that they could form, they could take an underdog and make him president. You following my logic here? Just like the African-American community in 1960 took an underdog, John F. Kennedy, and made him president, and that engendered loyalty and our civil rights legislation in which we are living with today started from African-Americans voting in an 80% number for the first time for a Democratic candidate, and he won that election. Richard Nixon was supposed to win that election in 1960, and I'm very glad that he didn't. But there also was a political allegiance to black people in this country because we are the ones responsible for getting John F. Kennedy elected. There was an allegiance that Donald Trump had to these Federalist Society, the Heritage Foundation, and evangelical conservatives and Christians that said, Trump, we're going to make you a winner, but when you win, you're going to give us our judges because we want to overturn Roe. And Trump was like, done. If you make me a winner, I'll give you everything you asked for. And guess what? He did. And Roe got overturned, didn't it? And they got every single Supreme Court justice appointed, every single conservative judge appointed to the federal bench. You're going to have, for the next probably 25 or 30 years, conservative judges on the federal bench that will be ripe to be put on the Supreme Court until the year 2060, probably. We have an opportunity as an African-American community here in Milwaukee to grab an underdog, somebody who is running for governor right now, and push them over the top, at least get them through the primary. And then once we get them through the primary and we show the strength of our coalition, we can then come back to the negotiating table with our underdog that we selected in the governor's race and be like, look, we're the ones that got you through the primary. Here's what you are going to do for us if you want our continued support, because you're going to need us in November. We can illustrate our muscle and our power by getting an underdog candidate who is not winning right now. But there is enough political power and support in the black community that has been ignored by the other candidates, because I think we were waiting for the candidates to select us. Now, what we can do is we can take our coalition and we can go select a candidate. We can go get us an underdog like black voters did in 1960, and like evangelicals and Christian conservatives and a Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation did in the year 2016. They went and grabbed them an underdog, and now that underdog is loyal to their wants, needs, wishes, and agenda. And I think the candidate is Joel Brennan. So I'm going to take a break, come back, continue my little chit-chat. It's just an idea. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Our phone number, questions, comments, recipe ideas, tips on how to stay cool in this scorching weather, is 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017. Let's talk to the foremost expert in really all things weather. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Sherwin. Now, listen. I think it annoyed me that you gave an example about Kennedy and Trump. Because, you know, my father, he cried when Kennedy got killed.
Bob, I'm not comparing the people or the personalities. I'm comparing the politics. They are very, very different. This is very sad what happened to Kennedy, but I had to do an analysis of how he got elected and how that created a loyalty to the African Americans in this country that really birthed the civil rights movement. Because he could attribute his win to the black community voting in an 80% number for him. It has nothing to do with who he was as a man or any of that other stuff. I'm just looking at these eras in politics because Donald Trump essentially followed the same suit that coalitions and groups of voters can take an underdog, make an underdog a winner, and then when that underdog becomes a winner, they are loyal to the group that made them the winner. Does that make sense to you on some level? Because if you understand then anybody can understand it.
Yes, I can't go no further with you, Sherwin, on that issue. But I got two issues, Sherwin, that you need to acknowledge.
Got more than
you really do. No, just two issues you really need to acknowledge.
You got more than that.
One thing is the thing around your neck. I think you're too tough to wear one around home by yourself around your neck, but you wasn't too tough when you was shoved out of the studio that I saw.
Bob, let me be real clear with you.
Hold on,
wait a minute now. If there's gonna be anything around anybody's neck, it's gonna be my hand around yours. You want to keep talking about necks?
Yeah.
You got a little frail neck. You got a little pencil neck. I can make a little OK symbol, and your neck can fit in the little OK part of the OK symbol. You got a little neck. Keep messing with me, old man.
Actually, I can't get you there.
I bet not see you at top of no flight of no stairs. You bet not catch me and you near some stairs. One of us ain't going to make it.
Oh, boy. Can I get the second thing in, sir?
No.
Okay.
If you're going to be disrespectful, I'm going to hurt your feelings, and I'm going to end up dating your daughter. I'm going to end up calling you daddy.
Look.
I'm going to be in your family.
The second thing is,
I'm coming to Thanksgiving with two of your daughters.
Oh, man. You are something else today.
Keep playing with me. Y'all think it's sweet.
You stole some water. You are a lightweight thief. I will send $50 to your producer. And then you give the change, buy some water for Rhea and Carrie. But
they don't even work here no more. I don't even know where Rhea is.
Thief.
Tell you what, Bob, why don't we do this? Here, why don't you send a $50 to me?
You are Jerry.
Here, tell you what, Bob.
You stole that water. You give other people ideas how to steal.
I'm about to steal your life. Why don't you do this, Bob? Send me the $50, and I'll go to the store. And I will apologize, and I will go and pay for the water. But send the $50 to me. In fact, send me $100. No. Send me $250.
No, I'm going to send you $50.
No, I want more than $50. You're taking up more than $50 worth of time.
I'm going to Walmart today, and I will tell your producer, you know, that I give him the number, just like I gave you the number before, and then you just buy the water and give Rhea and carry
Bob,
the chain about it.
Rhea hasn't worked here in like a year and a half. Hold on, let me ask you this question.
You find her. You go everywhere else and you
find her. Yeah, I find her. Bob, do you even know what my producer's name is?
Yeah, he's a white guy.
No. What his name is?
He's a white guy. I know he's a very intelligent guy. You know what I mean?
No, Bob, what is my producer's name? Say his name.
Sure, you know, don't put me through no tests. You put me through tests already.
What's his name, Bob? I just need to know the name now.
Sure. He's a white guy. I know that, you know.
You know he's not white. Do you understand that he is black?
That's what he said one time.
The truth was sure when Hughes will be back for hour two.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.